What the EFL? It's the Independent Football League podcast. Every week we break down all the biggest news from the EFL. On this episode, Brucey bonus for Baggies as Steve says sayonara. Heavens to Betsy, but not Betsy to Crawley. Rowberry, more like Noberry at Newport. Billich slaving a tough start to life at Watford. We hear from Sky Sports EFL skipper. Tip two bright young things in our scouting report and plenty more besides. Welcome to What the EFL. Well, hello again, listener, or maybe you're finding us for the first time. If so, welcome. We are here gathered to talk about the big things happening in the English Football League. My name's Matt Davis-Adams. Normally, I'm joined by the awesome twosome, but Sam Parkin is not with us today. He's got daddy daycare duties. We'll speak to Sam next week, and we will hear from him later in today's pod too. But Adrian Clarke is very much on board. How are you doing, Clarkie?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, flying solo today. But yeah, we know all about daddy daycare, don't we? When duty calls, you just got to do it. Got to grit your teeth and do it.
A lot of pressure on Adrian to dissect the tweet of the week later, but I think he's up for it. As I say, we will be hearing from a Sky Sports anchor, Michelle Owen, our old friend from the Totally Football League show days, will join us later to take the fit and proper guest test. Are you following us yet on Twitter? If not, it's at EFL What The. And if you're interested in sponsoring the pod, you can email whattheefl@yahoo.com. We'd love to hear from you. All right, later on, fit and proper guest test. First of all, news. I mean, we're just going to rename this, aren't we? Managers that got sacked, because it's happening at an alarming rate, even by Football League standards. Let's start with the least surprising one. Steve Bruce dismissed from West Brom. It's club statement time. They say West Bromwich Albion have today parted company with manager Steve Bruce. Backroom staff Steve Agnew, Stephen Clements and Alex Bruce have also left the Hawthorn. The club would like to place on record its thanks to Steve Bruce and his coaching staff for their efforts since arriving in February. And there's a bit more about Richard Beale being in interim charge, but just a moment to appreciate, Clarkie, that is an absolutely textbook club statement, isn't it? Like word for word. They probably copied and pasted it from the last guy.
They probably did. Yeah, they got used to it, haven't they, in recent years, West Bromwich Albion. I mean, Watford get a lot of stick, don't they, for hiring and firing gaffers. But West Brom can't be that far behind them. I think they'll be on to their fifth manager in 2 years. They've gone from Billich to Allardyce to Valerian Ismael to Brucey, and now it's going to be somebody new. So, they're copying the Hornets, aren't they?
Probably going to go for Chris Wilder, do you think? He was linked with it last time.
Would you want to go? Seriously, like, if you're Chris Wilder, I know it's a one of the plum championship jobs, but it's not a plum championship owner, is it? You know, I don't want to be too disparaging, but Guachon Lai or Lay hasn't got a great record, let's be honest. Hasn't really engaged the fans, hasn't really built anything substantial that the supporters can get behind. And they've veered, haven't they? As I've just outlined with the managerial choices, they've veered from one philosophy to another. Mainly, I guess, pretty direct, but when Slaven Bilic was there, they were really good and I enjoyed the football. They were very positive. I think they got rid of him way too soon. Sam Allardyce changed things, much more industrial, of course. Valerian Ismael took that to another level, but it didn't click. And Steve Bruce then tried to turn it back into a footballing team, but sort of found this middle ground that no one was really enjoying, and you just wonder where they're going to go next. I don't know. If I'm Chris Wilder, would I want to work for a club that's in a bit of a state? I think that much is clear to see. The same for Sean Dyche. I think they should go for a young manager with a clear philosophy and give him time to build. But if I was a young manager that wanted time to build, I don't know if I'd go to West Brom at the moment. So it's a really awkward situation.
Steve Bruce, difficult for him now, isn't it? Because he obviously wanted to get some of the Newcastle stank off him and not have that be how he was remembered as a manager. And let's not forget, this is a guy who's been promoted on numerous occasions from the Championship, albeit maybe not for a while. Is he going to keep chasing another job that's going to end better than this one so he can kind of finish not having been sacked, or should he just give up now?
When does it end well, really? I mean, obviously, every now and again, you get a Fergie story where you win the league and then you say, right, that's me done. It's pretty rare, isn't it? It might be it for Steve Bruce. And if it is it for Steve Bruce as a manager, then he can hold his head high, because you don't stick around in management that long without knowing what you're doing. I think he's had a great career. Yeah, it wasn't great at West Bromwich Albion. 1-7, drew 12, lost 11. You know, they conceded as many as they scored. that's not good enough ultimately for West Brom in the Championship. You should be, you know, winning a lot more games than you do. So yeah, it won't go down as a memorable stint for him. And if it is the end, then yeah, we wish him a happy retirement, because I think he's earned it. He's taken enough stick, hasn't he, down the years, Steve Bruce? Goodness me. So a lot of different sets of fans have given him flack. And he's been outstanding, hasn't he, at taking it on the chin. I think, I don't know if there's a better manager out there to absorb abuse from fans and Steve Bruce. Kudos to him for being able to do that. He's got thick skin.
But just take a break. Go sit on a Sky sofa or something. Do some punditry. Let somebody else get the stick.
I think so. Yeah, I think it's time.
At the other end of the experience spectrum, a couple of departures in League Two. James Robery sacked by Newport. The Exiles 18th in the League Two table after 13 games. Only 3 points above the relegation zone. And they lost at home to Rochdale, of all people, last Saturday. Their 8th defeat of the campaign. I'm a bit disheartened by this one, Clarkie, because he came in with a big reputation, didn't he? And my worry with people like James Robery and Kevin Betsy, who we'll talk about shortly, is how do they get back into the game? You know, first job, if you get sacked from it, we've seen how difficult it can be to get a sack.
Yeah, I think with James Robery, because his reputation was so strong as an academy coach, he'll be absolutely fine to sort of drop back into that. But for him to do that, it, with his tail between his legs to an extent, might be difficult. I think there was a good coach there. We saw it last season, didn't we? He changed Newport's style of football. They play some lovely stuff, possession-based, exciting, attack-minded. And he brought in some really good players, but I think the recruitment this year wasn't quite as good. They obviously lost Dom Telford, their best striker. They lost Baker Richardson, who was also up front, that did okay. And Finn Azaz was an excellent loanee. And he's been, you know, doing very well at Plymouth this season. So yeah, they lost some good players. And I think he lost his way a little bit as a coach. If you look at the stats, they don't keep the ball anywhere near as much as they did. They're certainly not creating as many chances. And ultimately, it was the home record. The back end of last season, they went from playoff contenders to mid-table in a flash because they were terrible at Rodney Parade. This season's record, 1-1, drew 1, lost 5. And I think that, yeah, the defeat to Rochdale was probably the final straw for a fan base that's getting fed up, as I guess they're entitled to.
Yeah, they came so close a couple of times under Mike Flynn. Meanwhile, Kevin Betsy sacked by Crawley. You tipped this last week, Adrian, so it's not a massive surprise. Sam said on our group chat they should give it Gemma Collins till the end of the season. I'm a bit worried about making that public just in case any of the crypto bros.
I loved it. It's a great text, wasn't it, from Sam?
you worry there's going to be an element of wackiness, at least about how they go about sourcing the new guy, don't you? You just hope that common sense prevails here.
I think they'd give it Ted Lasso, won't they? Just for just for giggles. Or a YouTuber. Maybe the manager of the Sidemen.
Your mate Logan Paul.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe let Logan take it on a short-term basis. They'll all do it for the publicity, won't they? Those YouTubers. But no, it's a funny one. I feel for Kev. Because Kevin had a great job at Arsenal. Under-21s manager. It's a pretty safe post. You know, he's well-liked, very well-respected. And his career was going very, very nicely. But he wanted to back himself. He had an opportunity to be a first-team manager in the EFL. And he thought, you know, this is my chance to prove I can be a manager at senior level. And it was always going to be tough. Crawley isn't a big club. They don't have a monumental budget. And they're working with owners that are new to English football. So, yeah, I think on reflection, he might think he made the wrong call there. So, it's a big risk that's backfired for him. A little bit like Robery, I'm sure he'll find a way back into the sort of academy arena because he's a really good coach. Just couldn't produce winning football.
Andy Woodman and Graham Alexander are the two favourites to replace him. We'll see what happens with that. I wanted to finish the news with a good news story. Charlie Wyke scoring his first goal after recovering from that cardiac arrest he suffered at Wigan's training ground last season. Not something we need to spend a long time on, Clarkie, but I just feel it's nice to talk about a feel-good story, particularly with the contrast of what we saw yesterday on Monday with Enoch Mwepu of Brighton having to retire because of a heart problem that's been detected. It's amazing, A, that Wyke has got back, B, that his manager saved his life, and C, that he's now scored a goal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it is a great story. Yeah, I was worried when Christian Eriksen came back initially, but he seems fine, doesn't he? And he's playing some great football for Manchester United. Charlie Wyke has had a slower recovery, hasn't he? He's taken it, you know, he hasn't rushed back, which I think is a really sensible move. And week by week, he's getting a little bit more game time, and this will do him the power of good to score a goal. If you're in Charlie White's shoes, you're just grateful, like I would guess, for every moment that you get out there on the pitch and every day that you get in life, because it can so easily be snatched away from you. Can't it? We've seen too many tragedies down the years with sudden cardiac arrest. So yeah, he'll count himself very lucky to still be here, and he'll cherish that goal so much, I think, for Wigan Athletic. And I hope he can kick on. But yeah, on Enoch and Wepu as well, you know, so sudden. You know, he's playing recently. If the condition is such that it puts your life at risk, then it, football just isn't worth it, is it? Obviously, with Charlie's situation, with Christian Eriksen's, there is a way that they've managed the situation so that he's safe, and yeah, that's good for him and good for his employers as well.
Yeah, let's hope he carries on in the vein that he has done this season. Okay, next today we'll reflect on some of the weekend's big games. Is Slaven Bilic still Watford coach? I'm just going to have a quick look at the Watford Twitter feed, Clarky. Ooh, we're looking to recruit an academy operations manager. Okay, fine. So he's still there for now.
Yeah, two more defeats. Seriously. If it goes to four defeats in five, what do we think Watford are going to do?
Well, the lovable Croat has lost back-to-back games now. He did start with a win, midweek defeat by Swansea, late one that, and then a 3-1 loss at Blackpool. We'll start with Blackpool, given that they actually won the game. They had lost three in a row at home before this, so pretty important for Michael Appleton, never mind Slaven Bilic.
It was, yeah, and it's a statement win, isn't it? And it showed, I think the story of this match from Blackpool's perspective is it showed togetherness and belief in what the manager was asking them to do, because when you're losing games, I've been there, I've seen it. Sometimes players can lose faith in what the manager is demanding of them and try and go off the cuff and move away from it. But they didn't. They stuck to the game plan. 4-3-3 it is under Appleton. Slightly different to how it was before, where it's more of a 4-4-2 often with the wingers being the star men for Blackpool. They're a bit more direct now. Before, when they had Josh Bowler, he was such a good player that it was all about getting the ball wide and providing ammunition for the guys in the middle. And now it's a bit different. They're more solid in midfield, and they're basically going a bit more direct back to front and getting their front three of Yates, Medine and Theo Corbianu to go and hurt the opposition. And they did that in this game. So yeah, well done to Blackpool. They got in the faces of Watford, recovered from a pretty poor first half to absolutely destroy the Hornets from halftime onwards. They, you know, just bullied them, bossed the game, and fully deserved to win. And Slaven Bilic was pretty scathing, wasn't he, afterwards of his team. So that tells you plenty. And there were good goals as well, weren't there, from Jerry Yates in particular. I thought that was excellent. And no player cut. I always think with Yates, when he scores goals, it's almost like he deserves them more than most front men because he does so much else. And that's why he's picked. That's why managers always want to use Yates, because he's such a good team player. And in this match, he spent a lot, probably more than half of this match, playing at wing back, tracking back, working hard for the team. So him to get those rewards at the end with a couple of goals, I think was really nice for him.
Yeah, doubled his tally for the season in doing so. Watford then, we mentioned about what happens if they lose their next fixtures. Norwich, Millwall, and then the derby against Luton. That Luton fixture already feels like a huge one.
Oh, it does, doesn't it? I hadn't seen those fixtures, Matt. That's that's tricky, I think, for Watford. But yeah, as I said before in this podcast, Slaven Bilic is a good manager. I think he will forge some togetherness, but that was his grouch, wasn't it? That was his grumble after the game. It's like the players didn't seem like they wanted to win badly enough. They didn't work hard enough as a collective, as a team. He's got to find a spirit within that group. The thing is, they're probably a bit all over the place, aren't they, Watford? A lot of the players thought they were going to leave Watford this summer and didn't. And then most of the other players thought they were going to work with Rob Edwards, and they were probably looking forward to that, and now they're not. So their heads are a little bit in the spin. He's got to just galvanise the group somehow. He's got good players. And I think he's also got to find a way to get Keenan Davis in the team every week. He was on the bench here. I think he showed last year that he's a very good championship striker. I didn't know why he was on the bench with Bayo starting here. And Asprilla as well, the youngster, I think he's having a very good season. in a difficult time for Watford, he was on the bench as well because he's changed it to a 4-3-3 rather than having the one in behind the main forward. So get those two onto the pitch would be my advice to Bilic.
Yeah, I was at the Forest Villa game on Monday night and I thought both of those teams could have done with Keenan Davis actually to hold the ball up. We did see Cameron Archer, who was so good at Preston last season. And speaking of Preston, shock of the weekend came at Carrow Road. Not only did Norwich lose at home for the first time this season, but Preston scored 3 goals in one game, almost doubling their total in the league on one afternoon in East Anglia. It's really interesting, isn't it, Clarkie, when teams do this, when they draw a lot of games and you don't know if they're good or if they're bad, and then they get a couple of wins and you think, oh, actually, they must be all right. They're on the fringes of the playoffs now. Coming up to a year in charge for Ryan Lowe, has he exceeded expectations?
I don't think he's exceeded, but I think he's on course. I do. I think he's, yeah, at Plymouth, they got a lot of clean sheets, didn't they? And we've seen the same at Preston North End. So he's obviously a good organiser. If you remember, anyone that remembers him as a player, he was a forward, wasn't he? So this is quite surprising, I guess, to some degree. But yeah, this win will... I think it could be such a shot in the arm for Preston because they know they're solid. They know they've got a good keeper. They know that they're quite good at managing games. I think that's their thing. They do soak up pressure. They do give chances to opponents, but they find a way to sort of keep them at bay. They're quite a savvy team, but because they weren't scoring, that might have impacted their confidence. Well, they've scored 3 here at Norwich, a team likely to be in the top 2, 3 or 4 for sure at the end of the season. So yeah, what a boost for them and for Emil Reese as well, because he's had a slow start to the season, but he's finding form now.
Are Norwich actually any good?
I don't know. They got a good manager. They are. I think they are good. I do. But when they were promoted before, they did have wobbles. And that first year when they went up under Farker, they let in a stack of goals, didn't they? But they had good individuals and they still got good individuals. I didn't rate Sargent at all, but he's having a very good season. Pookie's still worth a go. I like Marcelino Nunez. I love Omar Bamidele. We talked about him on my scouting report. I think he's a good player. So yeah, they're a decent team. I think this year's championship is, I know we talk, we spent a lot of time talking about it. There isn't a great team in the championship this year. It is more wide open, I think, than it was last year. Genuinely, I think the door is ajar for teams that weren't expecting to challenge to maybe even nick top 2. There's not a standout for me.
Yeah, 3 teams on 24 points, Sheffield United, Norwich and QPR. And then there's only 3 points between they and Blackburn, who are 7th. So plenty to take interest in over the next couple of months, definitely. If we head into League 1, Plymouth 3, Accrington Stanley 0. Going to try and get through this without making a Schumacher racing pun. Plymouth beat Accrington 3-0 at Home Park. It maintains pole position in the third tier. Adrian, are they the Ferrari of League 1?
Hey!
Oh, let myself
He's only
down.
Going to done it. He's done it. Now, fair play to you. For that, it was very, very smoothly done. They look it. I mean, they do look like a Ferrari at the moment. They're especially at home. Wow. I mean, what a record. And yeah, what a confidence that must give the players when they go out for every match at Home Park, sort of knowing that they've got such a tremendous record there.
It's so raucous as well, isn't it? It seems always full and always noisy.
Yeah. Crowds are up, aren't they? The crowds are up big time. I went on trial at Plymouth back in the day before I went to Stevenage when I left Southend, and I was hopeful at one point of getting a contract, but they had their eyes on someone else. They were two-timing me. So it never quite happened, but I would have liked to have gone there because of the crowd, because of the ground. Nice big wide pitch for wingers, and they've always played quite attacking football, Plymouth. And yeah, they're scoring a lot of goals. This game, they weren't brilliant, if I'm honest. But they found a way to win. 7 clean sheets in 13 now. Not failed to score in a single League One match, Plymouth Argyle this season. All the numbers point towards a really strong, really strong season. What did you think of the red cards?
I was going to ask you to talk me through it. You don't often see it, do you? So it's 1 tackle, 2 reds, Dan Scar and the Stanley skipper, Seamus Keneally. I feel like if the ref had had his time again, he might have shown them both a yellow. But once he got 1 red out, he thought, oh, I'm not 100% sure that it was him who actually made the foul. So I'm going to have to send both of them off it.
Yeah, I thought it was a nonsense. I really did. Because it serves the interest of nobody. But it was basically 2 players going for a 50-50, full-heartedly, maybe a bit recklessly, I've got to say that. And they both were as bad as each other. And I think they both missed the ball and just clattered into each other. They both were a little bit hurt, but it was so even that I just think he could have got away with just going, okay, boy, that was a bit silly. If one of you were late there, you would have been off. But seeing as you were both as bad as each other, I'll let you off here. Two yellow cards, we move on. But now Plymouth are without Scar, who's the only outfield player that had played from the start of every game this season for Plymouth. And you know, Accrington miss out on a really important player for them in the heart of their midfield. So an honest 50-50 has damaged both the teams there. But yeah, in terms of Plymouth, they're scoring good goals, different types of goals. One, I really enjoyed the last one. Just a big long ball from Randall for the substitute Hardy to run through and score. The second goal came with some beautiful football. Cosgrove finished it. And I think he's made a big difference. He's a big unit on loan from Birmingham. Didn't have a great goal record, but has now. Oh, he's got 3-3. I think he's got 5 goals in 7 appearances. Only 2 of those are starts, which means that Sam Cosgrove on loan has got a goal every 55.4 minutes, which empowers it. So, it gives them something different because their other strikers are all quick, technical, running behind kind of guys. He's someone that's more of a platform.
Meanwhile, at Oakwell, Exeter proved his life after Taylor winning their first match, minus Matt, 2-0 at Barnsley. Kevin Nicholson in caretaker charge for this one. It's one of those, isn't it, Clark? If he's in caretaker charge for a few games and they win, then maybe they have a decision to make. But as it is, it becomes a much more attractive position now to potential applicants because of what he's done with this win, doesn't it? Because you look at it and say, oh, we're 2 points outside the playoffs now and 2 points behind Barnsley, the team they beat.
It's great for Kevin Nicholson, isn't it? If he has an interest in taking the job, what a result. I mean, Barnsley are one of the best teams, I think, in the division. I think they will be there or thereabouts. He's got the better of a very astute manager as well in Michael Duff. So, yeah, that what a way to sort of kick on after Matt Taylor's departure. And it was great, wasn't it, that Jay Stansfield got the goals. We've talked about that before, about the sort of poignancy of his loan move. But, yeah, it's I think Exeter will be the neutrals sort of second team this season, just wishing him in particular the best of luck. And from what I've seen so far, Exeter don't need to worry about retaining in their League One status. They look like they're going to be fine.
Yeah, certainly been a good start to the season for them, as it has in League Two for Carlisle United. 3-1 win for them away at struggling Hartlepool. This is one of those that's passed me by, Clarkie. They're into the playoffs all of a sudden, defying expectations. And I think what they'll really like about this, or Paul Simpson in particular, they've been heavily reliant on Christian Dennis's goals. He didn't notch one here and they scored 3 anyway.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I wanted to talk about Carlisle United, because we haven't mentioned them on what the EFL so far, and I think that they deserve it really. And they're on an unbeaten run of 8 in the division, which is the longest unbeaten run of all the teams in that league. They're averaging 2 points a game during that spell, and yeah, the fans are starting to believe, as you would. I mean, they've only lost one game all season. That should be pointed out as well. So they're very difficult to beat. They've got a star striker in Christian Dennis, clearly 7 goals, but other players are chipping in. Owen Moxon is someone I wanted to talk about. He's got 2 goals and 4 assists. He got a goal in this one. He came from Annan Athletic. Now, I spent a short time on loan up in Carlisle, and it's right on the border, isn't it, with Scotland. And I found myself on my days off just having a little adventure in Scotland and just going, hopping over the border and going to visit various places. And that they do have a very close relationship, Carlisle, with Scottish clubs. And so it's no surprise that he's come from there. The thing is, he's a Carlisle lad. So he's actually come back to the place where he grew up. And he is a cult hero. They love him there, Owen Moxon. He's a proper Carlisle boy. And he's playing brilliantly. He's not a kid. He's 24. But yeah, he's playing the best football of his career. And Huntington at the back as well has been a little bit of a revelation for them. Alongside, and you'll remember this name from our Totally Football League show days, John Mellish. Remember we used to talk about him, Matt, being this goal. He went on an unbelievable goal run, didn't he? It was sort of a goal rush as a midfielder. Well, he's back at centre half now. Paul Simpson said, "Yeah, that hot streak's done and dusted. I need you at the back," and he's helped them big time. So yeah, well done Carlisle, well done Moxon, and also Amari Patrick in this game came off the bench to score a couple of goals as well. So yeah, Carlisle, on the march.
I'm going to say well done, Finn back as well. I don't know if he played well in this game, but he's on loan from Forest. If you recognise the name, his dad, Neil, won the Rugby World Cup with England. Last game, Northampton 0, Salford 1. Big win for Salford this against Northampton side, who are still in the top three despite this defeat, but Salford only 2 points behind them with a game in hand. They grind out results, don't they, Salford? They never win by big margins. They never lose by big margins, certainly in the league at least, but they seem to have a bit of grit about them.
Yeah, they control games. That's why teams find it hard to score against them. They keep the ball. And I think that is a great form of defence sometimes, and it can frustrate teams. They get opponents chasing them and then they pick them off because they've got quality individuals. And yeah, so far, I know it's really early days, but so far it's been a bit of a coaching triumph for Neil Wood at Salford City. He's transformed the style, and unlike someone like Kevin Betsy at Crawley, he's been able to marry it with winning football, and as we all know, that is the key. So yeah, that's a big win for Salford, and I think I'll be really surprised actually if they're not in the promotion mix this year.
Yeah, it's really interesting to watch the career arc of these young coaches who've come into it. You think Liam Manning, so good last season, struggling a bit this time. We've spoken about Robbery already, so we'll see if Wood can maintain it. All right, that was the weekend review. Next today, another EFL superstar takes the fit and proper guest test. All right, well, taking the fit and proper guest test this week is Sky Sports EFL anchor and expert, Michelle Owen. Michelle, thanks so much for being with us. Are you feeling the pressure today? Because we had David Prutton on the other week and he was very good.
I think Prutton is just a bit sharper, wittier and cleverer than me, but don't ever let him hear me say that, okay?
You're very modest. Tell us a little bit about how you got into presenting, because it's a lot of people's dream jobs.
Well, I never wanted to be on TV, which sounds ridiculous when I say it, but I started off in radio and I was doing radio presenting for years. And when I was doing that, which was hard to get into anyway, as anyone knows, I did all this sort of hospital radio and community radio, loads of unpaid stuff, probably for 5 years. And then at a radio station, I just didn't leave alone. They gave me a chance on air, properly paid, literally on minimum wage. And I had to work sort of three jobs to make it work. And I sort of progressed there. And they had a football show, but they wouldn't let me present the football show. They weren't having that. I'll leave you to decide why. But I used to go out and like do match reports, and it was in the South Wales. So I'd go to Cardiff City, Bristol City, and then I got used to doing presses and things like that. And when I left there, I'd actually stayed in touch with someone I did work experience with at Sky when I was 20. And so this is a few years later, and I just kept sending them what I'd done, like my post-match reports and little sports bulletins. And yeah, basically I didn't leave them alone. And in the end they said, oh, okay, we'll give you a shot on Soccer Saturday. You can do an ISDN game as a trial. So did that, didn't massively mess up. Although someone sat on the cable just before I was about to do my first report on Soccer Saturday. I was so stressed. So I dialed in and Jeff was about to throw to me. And yeah, I think there was silence. So I look like an idiot. First ever one on Soccer Saturday, but thankfully plugged it all back in and it all worked and I didn't mess up too badly. And I did ISDN on Soccer Saturday while I was doing another job in radio for maybe a year, year and a half. And I went in one day to sort of learn more about how the show works. And they said, oh, would you ever fancy doing it in Vision? And I was like, oh yeah. You know, I suppose it's sort of just the same, but you can't look down at your notes. They said, yeah, okay. And didn't hear anything about it for a while. And then they gave me my first Envision game. Weirdly enough, 7 years ago today, actually, it came up on my memories. Thanks. Hold on. I remember it was 2-2 and I'm pretty sure, let's have a little look. I'm pretty sure it was Yeovil v Dagenham. And I look about 1,000 years younger. Yeah, it was Yeovil v Dagenham and Redbridge, 2-2.
Glamour game to start with.
Glamour game, all the glamour at Ewish Park. I was so nervous. So that was my first Envision game. And I slowly started doing sort of more Envision games through the season. And then people at Sky were like, oh, what do you do? Do you want to work for us more? Which was lovely. And it sort of snowballed from there, really. And I had to make a decision between sort of carrying on doing music radio or going into football. And football and music had always been two huge passions of mine. But I got a bit bored of radio, if I was honest, music radio. In the end, I decided to sort of take the chance. I jumped across. I went freelance and started doing lots more for Sky Sports News. In the end, I started presenting. I make it all sound really simple, but anyone who's been through this process knows it takes blimmin' ages and you get knocked back and told you're rubbish a million times. Yeah, and What year are we? 2022. So last summer, I got given the chance to present the EFL because I've been presenting on Quest a little bit, doing the EFL highlights, which I really enjoyed. I'd obviously been presenting on Sky Sports News for a few years by then. And I think, you know, because of doing all of those games like Yeovil v Dagenham and Redbridge and all the EFL games that I'd done probably for 8 or 9 years by then, they felt that my knowledge was sufficient enough and they'd seen me in front of camera and they'd seen me do the highlights on Quest, which I love doing. And yeah, they gave it a punt and they haven't sacked me yet, so it's going okay.
Very good at presenting you are as well, Michelle. No, it's all going brilliantly. Yeah. No, congratulations on, you know, what's becoming a great career. And you do have a football background, right? You can actually play the game to a decent level. I've seen clips of your little boy. He is decent. He is a name to look out for. But I know that it's in your genes too.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's not in my genes because, weirdly enough, my family hate football. All of my family hate football. So I got into it when I was sort of 4 and I started collecting the Premier League sticker albums. And I don't even know exactly what got me into football, but I just loved it. And I loved playing it. As soon as I had a ball, I just used to go in the garden for hours. So I started playing when I was really young and there was no girls team. So I joined a boys team when I was 5 or 6. They were called Nova United in Newport, where I used to live. And then we moved to sort of the Welsh border and I found a new team, but I was the only girl playing with boys for years. And when you look at the likes of sort of Ellen White, who's now retiring, that's sort of my generation. And I look at what they achieved and how brilliant they became in sort of that adversity of having nowhere to play. And it's quite incredible because I found it quite hard finding somewhere to play. In the end, when I had to stop playing with the boys, I got recruited to, it was called a Centre of Excellence then, which I guess would be an academy now. So it's Shrewsbury Town Centre of Excellence. So I played there for a while. And yeah, I played when I was growing up at a decent level, I suppose. And then I went to university. I stopped when I was about 15, 16. Got into boys and things. But when I went to university, I got back into playing. And after university, I played in the Women's Premier League, which would now be step 3, I guess, of the women's game, because it's all been rejigged since then. At that point, there was WSL 1, WSL 2, and then the Premier League. And I played for Cardiff and I played for Caintrim, which isn't such a familiar name. But yeah, a highlight of my footballing career, Matt, one for you, was a hat trick against Nottingham Forest.
Well, you must have been pretty good in that case. What were you, a striker then?
I was a striker, yeah. When I started playing, I thought I'd be a midfielder, but I remember one game, just with the boys, I used to go everywhere, like travel all over with them. And I used to get 1 or 2 minutes at the end of the game. They never used to play me because I was a girl. And I remember one game I had to fill in up front and I scored 2 goals. And the next game, they still didn't play me, but that was that. I then switched to being a striker from then on, and I'm quite lazy, so it suited me. But yeah, I loved it. I loved playing. And it's funny enough, I saw an old teammate at the weekend and she said, oh, do you think you'll come back to playing? I said, no, not now. I'm into my 30s now. Let's be realistic. But to see how it's grown from when I was growing up, and I mean, we obviously have a little boy, but if we'd had a little girl and she'd love football, I'd be so much more confident of her options now. But yeah, our little boy, well, say he gets the footballing pedigree from me, not his dad. But his dad was, as he likes to tell me, semi-pro. We use that term loosely, but yeah, he loves it. He would play all day, every day if we could. So come rain or shine, we're in the garden playing football, which is lovely. And he genuinely loves football. He came to the Championship playoff final, which was lovely when I was working. And he's just really into it, which is great.
Well, if anything's going to sell him on football, it'll be last season's Championship playoff final, I guess. You kind of alluded to it earlier, but do you feel that you had to work a lot harder to get on in football and, you know, this industry specifically because you're a woman? And do you think that that has changed at all, you know, in this sort of 10, 15 years since you first broke through?
Stop aging me, but no, that is about right. It has changed massively. When I started out, as I said at that radio station, they didn't want to let me present the football show because I think they were worried about what the audience would think and things like that, which is ridiculous. But then when I went to presses and things, I used to be so shy, obviously because I was very new to it, but I was the only woman in the room every time. Every time I was in a press box, always the only female there. And I would say 95% were super welcoming. There were some weird comments from people that clearly never had much of they just hadn't had their horizons sort of opened, shall we say, to put it politely without swearing on the podcast. But there were a few weird comments when I started out, and there were just a few weirdos. But I would say the vast majority were always super nice to me and super kind and treated me no differently. But then, yeah, what I've noticed in the last few years is going from the only female being at a ground, there's loads of women there. I think now for women, it's far, far easier than it was sort of 10, 11, 12 years ago. It's become normal for a woman to be at a game now. I don't think anyone bats an eyelid when a woman walks into a press conference or is presenting a football show. And it's great for people really only a few years younger than me that the opportunities are actually, it's a good thing to be a woman now, I would say. Whereas when I started on Soccer Saturday, Bianca was the only female that had ever done it. And she'd been the only female for sort of 4 or 5 years on there. And then I came along and it was like that for another few seasons. And then now there's loads of women on it. And I think as long as you're good enough, it should never be a problem.
Hear on that for sure. On Soccer Saturday, you must have had some good times. Obviously, there's a great big long show reel of sort of cammy clangers and funny bits. Are there any sort of funny tales that you can tell us that happened on camera or off it?
Yeah, I think one that I really remember, and it went viral really quickly, and I didn't realise, because when I used to do Soccer Saturday, I never used to check my phone in a game. I think that's changed a bit now in the last few years, because your phone's actually quite important for your stats and things, and now you can actually get on Wi-Fi at grounds. I was doing a game a few years ago, and Swansea were playing someone, and Jeff threw to me, and I'd done a piece that week, but it was so cold and windy down Swansea Bay that I was wearing a hat, and Jeff was just sort of taking the mick out of my hat, and I don't think what I said was that funny. It was just off the cuff. I just said, "Oh, you're just jealous, the hairline's receding, you just want a hat like mine." And then did the report, and then at the end of it, and he said, "Well, that's Michelle making her last appearance for Soccer Saturday." And people just, you know, to us, like, it's a chuckle, but people, I think, just love Jeff's humour. And it's not me that made that funny, it's Jeff that makes that funny. And I don't think we realise how good Jeff is. We appreciate him, but when he's not doing that show anymore, which we thought he might not be this season, mm-hmm. He's irreplaceable. He is irreplaceable. And we had lots of laughs over the years. And then I had that horrible moment where I missed a red card at Warsaw because the stanchion, I think we talked about it on the old podcast, there's a stanchion literally in my way, and Jay Spearing, I think, two-footed someone, and I didn't see it. And I didn't see the red card because it was all behind the stanchion. So the referee blew his whistle and I was making a note of something. And the next thing I knew is Jeff was throwing to me saying, "There's been a red card in the Warsaw game, but what's happened, Michelle Owen?" I was like, and I said, "Has there?" Just like Cammy did, because it was just like, what came out my mouth? And obviously Jeff said, "Oh, get out your fingers." And it was very funny. But unfortunately, a lot of people took it the wrong way. And I got a lot of stick for it online. And actually off the back of that, everyone was so lovely to me, because it's really the only, I mean, we get stick a lot. We get a lot of stick on social media. There's some great blog buttons and filters, as you guys know, that you can use to weed it out. But that was probably the hardest period of my career, when I made that mistake, and I was so annoyed I'd made that mistake after, because people were rinsing me for it. Because at the time, I didn't really think much of it. I thought that was quite funny. And it doesn't matter, because everyone who knows me knows I wouldn't take my eyes off the game. My camera op knew that. It wasn't like I was messing around doing something else and I missed a red card. Not that Cammy was that time. I don't know what Cammy was doing. Let's quantify that. But it was very hard after. And then for some reason, like, the newspapers picked it up, and it was trending on Twitter. And afterwards, it was very difficult. I don't actually like having all that attention, which is ridiculous, because I present football on TV. But I present football on TV because I love football, not because I like being on TV. I mean, there's great things that come with it. Let's not beat around the bush. But like I said at the start, I never got into telly for being on telly. I do it because I love football. And all of that, and all that attention that came with it, I hated.
I was going to ask you about influences. I guess Jeff would be a big one on your career.
Yeah, definitely. Jeff has always been amazing to me since the day I started Soccer Saturday and Soccer Special. And I remember going in and he was lovely to me. And, you know, I can text him and I can phone him and he'll always give me the time of day, which is amazing. Also, Ellie Oldroyd on 5 Live, I was part of a Sound Women mentor scheme probably about 10, 11, 12 years ago. And she's, for me, like, the ultimate sports broadcaster. I'm not a cricket fan, but when I hear her do the cricket, it's sublime. It's seamless. She's just so effortless in everything she does. So Ellie was a massive influence on me, and she gave me great bits of advice when people wouldn't get back to me. And she said, "Look, just do this. And if it doesn't work out, then you can do something else, or you can ask someone else." And yeah, if it wasn't for Ellie, I definitely wouldn't be where I am today.
You know us well enough, Michelle, to know that we always finish with a super serious, really difficult question. Yours just came to me earlier, actually. I'm dying to know, what was your go-to goal celebration when you scored? I mean, when you got those two for the boys' team, surely it was a finger to the lips. That's what I was telling you all along.
I think, like, when you're a kid, like, you're proper cheeky, aren't you? And, like, you cup your ear or something like that. But no, I didn't have... It's funny, my husband used to watch me quite a lot, and he'd just be like, "You never used to know, like, what to do when you scored. You'd sort of jump up and down and scream a bit." So I wasn't as cool as someone like Erling Haaland or like that. I couldn't ever have one of these cool celebrations, but that's pretty naff, isn't it, really?
Even no if I scored slide. Now. No knee slides, Michelle.
Oh, you see the pictures we played on, you'd cut your knees up. Or the AstroTurf, those little black bits getting your socks going everywhere. So I didn't really ever have a cool celebration, but our son Zach's hilarious because he sees everything on telly now, whether it's in the EFL or in the Premier League or whatever we're watching. There's so many different celebrations. Like, he'll score and, like, do a little sort of roly-poly or whatever. So it's so funny the way kids are learning now. And I was talking to Joby, of course, who I work with a lot, and he was saying, yeah, his boys watch a lot of football on YouTube, and everything you see now is a celebration, or these pros, like the young pros, it's all influenced by that. So that's my excuse. I didn't have anything cool. I didn't have anything cool to copy. I didn't have Sky Sports growing up, so I couldn't see all the celebrations. So there you are.
All right. So when you come out of retirement, we're expecting to get a clip online of you doing the Harling sit down in the Buddhist pose. And,
yeah. Do you know what I would have loved to have done? I would have loved to be able to do, because I loved Michael Owen growing up, so I would have loved to have done the front somersault, but definitely not flexible enough or agile enough for that. So it was just tap-ins for me.
What do we think then, Clarkie? Has Michelle passed the fit and proper guest test?
Of course she has. Yeah, she always passes the test. Brilliant stuff. Yeah, great. It's great to have you on the show, Michelle.
Look, if Pretz passes, surely I pass. So yeah, I thought I'd be exactly. safe today. But no, great to chat to you guys.
Many thanks to Michelle Owen for joining us there. Really great to have her on the pod. Next today, it's our scouting report. All right, Clarkie, you've gone for a Birmingham defender. I think you're just pleading to my better nature here because you know how much I love a great name. Austin Trusty, magnificent stuff. Exactly. For a defender as well, particularly. He couldn't be a striker, could he? Trusty, he needs to be like reliable. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, Austin, because it's not spelled with an I, it's an O, so it's Austin Trusty, is an Arsenal player. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, Matt. He signed last season and was immediately loaned back to Colorado Rapids. So he's a gooner. He's gone straight on loan to Birmingham City, and they love him. Absolutely love him. I've seen him in the flesh, and I was impressed. He's one of those increasingly important players, I think, for managers across all levels of the game. He's a left-footed central defender, and that does matter, doesn't it? I think it really matters when you play with a back three, as Birmingham City do, because of the balance it provides. Because in those left back areas, they're really, really comfortable to take part in the build up play. And yeah, Trusty is one of the reasons why he's so liked by Blues fans is because of his composure. So on the ball, he's very, very good. And when he's put under pressure, he's the sort of player that will just chuck in a little dummy or a bit of control, fool the striker, and then play it nice and simply. He's one of those calm-headed centre backs. So that's asset number one. The other obvious traits are sort of competitiveness, determination, aggression. A lot of American players are fit and strong and aggressive, aren't they? And he fits the bill there. He's big and, yeah, powerful. And he does dominate the opposition strikers. I don't think he's that quick, which is why he might never play for Arsenal. He might never play in the Premier League. But I do think that Birmingham City have got themselves a centre-back that might be known as one of the Championship's better centre-halves. You know, someone you can trust in, if you'll excuse the pun, or rely upon, you know, year in, year out. So, yeah, just keep a lookout for this guy. John Eustace loves him. He keeps telling everybody, this guy should be at the World Cup. He should be a shoo-in for the American national team. At the moment, he isn't. But if he keeps this up, he might steal a last-minute place in that squad. So, yeah, Birmingham fans are big fans of Austin Trusty.
All right. I really hope Wikipedia isn't lying to me here, because according to them, his full name is Austin Levi Josiah Trusty, which makes it even better. He was born in Media, Pennsylvania, and he started his career at Bethlehem Steel.
Oh, wow. Yeah. what a CV that is. But yeah, I like centre-backs that love defending, that they clearly enjoy it. And this guy is enjoying it. And I think he's enjoying being in England and being part of it. So, yeah, it's, at the moment, it's all going swimmingly for him in what's been a sort of up and down season for the Blues.
All right. Well, that's Austin Trusty then, Clarkie Scouting Report for the week. Sam can't be with us today, but he's so desperate to talk to you about a Tranmere man on loan from Southampton that he sent us this voice note.
Thought it was time I did a player that Matt had heard of, and also someone who'd come through the famed academy, the academy at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea. The man in question is now at Southampton on loan at Tranmere, Dinil Simiu. I've been thinking about playing homage to this chap for a couple of weeks now. Another clean sheet at the weekend at Sutton United for him and Tranmere Rovers. That's four on the spin now. So he's had five starts in the centre of their defence alongside Jordan Turnbull, and they've conceded twice. Four clean sheets on the spin, as I said. And I took a little bit of a deeper look. I mean, they hardly have a shot going on their goal. In the last four games, 33 shots, So that's about 8 per game, which doesn't sound, you know, too amazing. They've only conceded 5 shots on target in those last 4 games. So he and Jordan Turnbull are absolutely colossal right now. Defensively, they are immaculate. Tranmere, I think it's only Orient that have conceded fewer goals. What do I like about him? Incredibly combative, obviously physical. The fans are absolutely adoring him. He's winning man of the match accolades like they're going out of fashion. Very competent on the ball, I would say. Thinking back to his time at Chelsea, probably the area that he needs to really hone in on to improve if he wants to make it back to the highest level or into the Championship, but at League Two level, absolutely got enough composure to step out with the ball. I think he showed that when he was at Carlisle last season. They played more of a back three, and Paul Simpson encouraged their wide centre halves to get on the ball and step into midfield, and I think he did that in a really accomplished manner. So this season so far, a bit more about defending the box, defending the area, winning headers. He's up there straight away in terms of clearances. I think he's almost in the top 10 in the division. 29 he's made in just those 5 starts, one substitute appearance in a defeat against Leyton Orient. So they're going to do their utmost to keep him, I would imagine, for the entirety of the season. But I would expect Southampton to have designs on him going out maybe and testing himself at a higher level. So he's had an incredible end to last season at Carlisle, fantastic start to this season at Tranmere's, and no surprise that they are climbing that table, because they haven't got loads of goal scorers in that side. So I think their success is going to be built on their defence. Have a good show. Ta-ta.
So that is our scouting report for the week. That will just about do us for today, but we've got to do a tweet of the week before we go, haven't we? You pointed this one out to me, Clark. It's from Chris Farino, who scored for Wickham at Oxford at the weekend. I like the sentiment. I'm not sure I like the video. So he's included the video of his goal on it, which is, I don't know, a little bit braggadocious, maybe.
braggadocious, I love that.
But he says, fans were mustard applause emoji. Boys define resilience. What a group. I'm not sure what this emoji is. It's like a face with something on the head that might be a hairbrush or something. And the goal felt good too. Blue heart emoji. Can you decipher that for me?
Well, first and foremost, I'm a user of the term mustard. I think it's underused in football circles. So for him to steer away from the familiar fans were great with mustard, gets the sort of tip of my hat. Boys defined resilience. I mean, yeah, I guess so. But where has it been the rest of the season? I would question that. And as I would when he says, what a group. And I agree. I don't know what that emoji means.
I've just looked it up. It's saluting face, apparently. So salute. Presumably that it's him putting his hand to his head in a way that, you know, you'd salute if you were in the American military.
Do you know what? I applaud that as well, because he's pushing the boundaries, and I don't think we should inhibit footballers. This is the big thing with Sam and his criticism of modern day players. He thinks they just tick boxes. They don't try and come up with a little bit of invention. He's done that here as Farino. I don't know about what a group, given the season Wickham have had so far, but maybe he just had a bit of a head rush after that win and that goal. So, for me, it's good. It's an 8.5 out of 10. Well played.
Yeah, and we appreciate the content, if nothing else. So many thanks, Mr. Farino, for that. That is going to wrap things up for us today, though. If you use a podcast platform like iTunes, which has a ratings system, if you could give us a 5-star review, if you think we're worth it, and leave a couple of words for us, that would be really appreciated. It will help other Football League fans find us. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter too, at EFL Whatthe there. And if you want to sponsor the pod, drop us an email. It is whattheefl@yahoo.com for that. We'll be back next week when we'll have a guest co-host, because Clarky, you're taking your, what, 300th holiday of 2022?
Hey, this podcasting business is hard graft, isn't it? You need to rest and recuperate and recharge. So yeah, I'm going away and then going to come back stronger, I promise.
All right. Well, it's me, Sam, and A.N. other than next week. Thanks for listening. Do tell a friend. It will really help us out. But for Adrian, for me, for Michelle, for Sam, that was this week's What the EFL. We'll catch up with you again soon.